Well, welcome everyone. This is Tom Sparrow, Chair of the Storytelling and Organization Group. And with us today, we have the pleasure of listening and learning about Mark Boldman, who has just released in the last year here a book on storytelling tips, creating, crafting, and telling stories, 101 tips from professional storyteller Mark Boldman. And Mark has been very active in the National Storytelling Network in lots of different ways. So welcome, Mark.
Well, thank you, Tom, and thanks, everybody, for jumping on the call. I'm quite honored that Tom asked me to do this. I'll tell everybody, as I said to him, I belong to the SIO. I'm by no means an expert, and the reality is I would love to get in some more companies or organizations and do some work, but I really haven't done that much, and I think that's just a function that I haven't been able to get a foot in the door somewhere. But I say the same thing about storytelling. I'm not an expert, but I do believe I have some expertise. So I've been saying that, talking about that, writing about that for a while now. To give you a little bit of background about myself, I started out at a very early age, about 10 or 11, as an actor. And till I was about 30, I was an actor, dancer, singer. So as looking back, I realized that part of my life, I was dealing with other people's stories as an actor and portraying their stories. And then when I left the professional theater, I went into something called psychodrama, which is an action-oriented type of therapy. Some people have heard of Gestalt, and it's similar to that. The essence is it's putting into action what people are telling you rather than just listening to someone and one person in an office, and it's a group setting. And there again, I was listening to people's stories and help them put their stories in action to help understand what was going on with them. When that area of my life kind of died out with managed care in the hospital setting, I did that for about 16 years. I went into mediation and became a mediator and did family mediation, which is really divorce mediation, and small business mediation, and also workplace mediation. And there again, when I started to look back at all these things in my life, I realized, once again, I was dealing with story. People were telling me their stories. I was encouraging them to both tell their story and listen to the other party. So as I think about all this, my life really had a lot to do with story. And I wasn't a formal storyteller, but I was using it in a lot of areas of my life. And then finally, about 7 years ago, I started taking a class at South Mountain Community College here in Phoenix about storytelling. And, of course, after the first day that I walked into the class, I realized that I had a passion for it and that that's actually what I wanted to do. And about 2.5 years later, I quit my job and decided I would focus full-time on storytelling. And that's pretty much how I got into the field. I just decided that's what I was going to do. I had no, like most storytellers, I had no job and no income. So, but I said I wanted to tell stories. When I got into the field of storytelling, at the very beginning, I had a sense that nobody was going to really know me as a storyteller until I got out there and did a bunch of telling. And I realized that locally I could certainly do that in a lot of my there were open mics and guild meetings here in Phoenix, like most other places. But I made a clear decision that I wanted to get my name out there. And so my decision was to start this email, this e-newsletter, and start writing about the events and things that were going on in Phoenix, and also put out a calendar at the same time, and in the newsletter to start writing little tips and tidbits And so I've been doing that for 3 years now. And one time somebody asked us, a bunch of different people, why we blog or why we write a newsletter. And quite honestly, I said, I think I have some information that can be helpful to people, and I believe I have a facility for writing as well as storytelling. And so once a week for the past 3 months, I've been writing a newsletter and coming up with a tip and a little tidbit every single week, which sometimes is not easy.
Yeah. And Mark, just to stop you for a moment there, when you say that you write a newsletter, that's an electronic newsletter, and you send it out to people who have opted in for it, or say a little bit about that.
Actually, it's a little different than getting a newsletter in your email. But mm-hmm. if you can go to my website, which is storytellermark.com, and anytime you can see the current newsletter, if you just click on the link to newsletter, or you can actually go back to see any of the newsletters from any of the previous 3 years. And if people want to be on my email list, they can click on a link there. And what I do is I send out just an email that says the newsletter's up and here are some of the topics that are going on in the newsletter. And in mm-hmm. that way, just for those who might be interested in websites, it forces people to go to my website in order to read the whole newsletter. And that increases my ratings in Google and the search engines versus me sending out a newsletter that just goes into your email. So I send mm-hmm. out a little email that has some teasers about here's the topic I'm talking about. And then when people come to the email, click through to the newsletter, then I get a better rating. So that's what I do. I dribble to my website.
Mm-hmm.
But it's available. And I also post on Facebook every Monday morning when it's ready and when it's available. It's pretty simple. It's pretty easy.
Yeah, and you just put a series of links in there that people can click on to travel into your newsletter from your website.
The reality is any of the links go straight into the newsletter, and then they can just scroll down and read any part of the newsletter that they want.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the tips are usually pretty simple, either about creating or crafting stories or telling stories. I think this week I did one on using microphones, and I had posted some before, but every once in a while I've been to so many open mics or meetings where people do use microphones but don't have a lot of experience. So I figure, I'll write another tip about how to use a microphone.
Uh-huh.
And I rarely plan out what I'm going to write about until Sunday night comes, and sometimes even Monday morning.
Yeah.
So, I thought I would tell a quick story here.
Great. Thank you.
And this is a story I learned a long time ago, and I actually learned it back when I was doing mediation, but I believe that it has lots of connections to businesses or organizations. And one of the things I believe about storytelling is I'm real passionate about it. In fact, I teach twice a week at Glendale Community College, and I also teach fifth and sixth graders at an elementary school here about how to tell stories and use stories to communicate, and that's my real thrust. But here's a story that I'd known for a long time, and in fact, the interesting thing about this story is I'd heard it many times, and then I had told it many times, and I didn't know whether it was true or not. I thought it was kind of a ubiquitous, sort of apocryphal story, and afterwards I'll tell you what happened one day. So I call this story The Lost Account, and there was a very large business that there was an account executive in, and he was doing pretty well in the business, except one day he unfortunately made a huge mistake and the ramifications were that he lost a $1 million account. And boy, you know, he got nervous. He got real scared because he thought, I've lost this account. I'm going to get fired. And wow, that account was a $1 million account. I can never get that one back. I'm in big trouble. Well, indeed, the next day he came into work and there was a message on his desk that said, the boss wants to see you. And so he kind of took a deep breath, went to the boss's office, knocked on the door and went in, and there was the boss. And instead of a pink slip, the boss handed him a folder and said, here's a new account I want you to take over. And the young man looked at him and was very puzzled, and so puzzled that he had to speak up, and he said, I don't really understand. I just lost $1 million account. Why are you giving me a new one? And the boss looked at him for a moment and then got a big smile on his face, and he said, well, why would I fire you? I just spent $1 million to train you. We'll give you a minute to let that sink in. And I've used that story with some CEOs that I've met, because so many people think that making a mistake means you're going to do poorly. And one of the things I believe in and tell my students all the time is that if you make a mistake, that's what helps you learn. And so this boss of this huge company knew that, and he said, I can't fire you. I just spent $1 million to train you. You know, if you hire someone else, they might make that same mistake. And one of the things that I thought was quite funny was I told that to another mediator one time, and she said, well, that really happened. And I said, what do you mean? She said, I used to work for IBM, and that actually happened, and it was in our company. So I got some validation that that was a true story. So I don't know if anybody wants to unmute their phones, or anybody have any comments or thoughts about that story, if you've heard it before, or what it feels like to hear that for you. Anybody? Bueller?
This is Sarah, and I had not heard that story before, and I love it.
Well, that's great. And by the way, I give full permission for anyone to tell that story, because that one is certainly not mine. I heard it a long time ago, and I did get validation from somebody who told me that she worked at IBM. So anyone's fully capable of telling that story out there to use it in any way, shape, or form.
I will. Thank you.
This is David. I had the fortune of, when I first started in one of my careers, working for a company in Boston that was sort of the IBM of the insurance industry, and very much the same culture there. And the byproduct of that is not only do you retain good salespeople and you train good salespeople, but they become better managers because of how they were treated early in their career. So it's a continuing benefit that the organizations get from that type of attitudes.
Yeah, thanks, David. I think that's a great comment, and shows when you're dealing with organizations or businesses how it's not just one little thing, that it's almost like that old concept of throwing the stone in the water and the ripples go out. And I absolutely agree that that can go both up the line and down the line in management, that if one person is treated well, then they will start to treat their people well, and you learn from how you are treated. And so that was a great comment. Thank you.
Yes, this is Cora. I just retired from an organization that can use this story. I don't think that they understand the value that they have placed in some of their employees and are readily jump to letting them go. And, you know, sometimes employees that have been there for many years and have done an absolutely excellent job, but does one mistake and they're gone. So
right.
Absolutely. I've been wondering how I could help this organization since I'm retired from it. And this was just absolutely a jewel. I mean, it's a diamond. It's going to be so perfect way for me to begin a conversation with them. So thank you.
Thank you, Cora. You know, one of the things that I think happens in storytelling is when we use a story in any situation, but certainly in a business or an organizational setting or an advocacy setting, we can help people see things in a framework that's different than they're used to. So even this short little piece of story, sometimes people, and this is what I learned in the field of mediation a lot, is that people dig their heels in and they're used to certain ways. And, you know, one of the things in business that kills a business is that phrase, well, this is the way we've always done it, or this is the way we've always looked at it. And I think storytellers can help people put a different frame or framework on an issue or an incident that people can begin to see things from a different point of view.
Yeah.
Unless anybody jumps in, I guess I'll just sort of move ahead a little bit, if that's all right, Tom?
Yes, that'd be great, Mark.
And absolutely, if somebody wants to jump in or make a comment or ask a question, go right ahead. And I am going to ask a question right now because when Tom asked me to do this, excuse me, one of the things he said was, well, why don't you come and talk about your book and maybe give us your top five tips, which I thought was an interesting concept. And I guess I'll back up just a little bit and tell you about the book. It was just about a year ago, a little over a year ago, that I had been doing this for 2 years, writing tips in the newsletter once a week. And it was just before the conference in Phoenix a year ago, about 2 or 3 months before the conference. And I just sat down and thought for a minute, gee, I wonder, I've got about 101 or 102 or 3 tips. I've been doing this for 2 years, 52 weeks a year. I wonder if there's a book in this. And I happen to be good friends with Ted Parkhurst of Parkhurst Publishing. We've known each other for a long time, and I actually am fortunate to be good friends with him, and I've been doing his website for a couple of years. And I called him up and said, hey, I think I have a book here. The conference is coming up. Can you give me some hints or point me in the right direction about self-publishing? And I was very lucky and feel very honored that Ted turned right around and said, oh, no, you don't need to self-publish it. Let me publish it. And and I said, well, oh, do you think we could get it out before the conference? And he said, absolutely. Now, he did give me a lot of other work to do that I had to knuckle down and do. But so I consider myself extremely lucky to have him as a colleague and friend and now my publisher to be able to say that, because I know it takes a lot to self-publish and it takes a lot to search for a publisher out there for a lot of people. And I really consider myself very lucky to have been able to have Ted do this. So
Mark, let me just stop you for a quick second because there may be other people on the line who possibly have a book in mind at some point. And I found Ted Parkhurst to be just very approachable for anybody who goes to the conference, but also just his materials seem to be that he's very open to storytellers pitching their project to him. Is that your impression?
Well, it certainly is mine, and I'm not sure how many people know that if you've been in NSN for a while, you know there was a publisher, still is, called August House. And actually, Ted and his former wife owned that, and their focus was publishing books on storytelling. And when he was first wife got divorced, they sold the business, and Ted had a non-compete clause for 5 years. And once that 5 years was up, he decided to go back into business with his brother, and that's what Parker's Brothers Publishing is. And so I always tell people that there are really only two publishers in the country that focus on storytelling, and Ted used to own one and now owns the other one. And yeah, their focus, he does some other, there are some other categories that he deals with, but obviously about 70-80% of the titles are all either collections of stories or storytelling educational books. He's just published Bobby Norfolk's book about his life. He's published Lynn Ford. Has, I think, three books out with him now. And so there are a lot of, I again, consider myself lucky to be in a category with many, many of the seasoned tellers out there who are also published authors.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else out there have a question or a comment about the book or about publishing? One of the things that Ted said that I had to do, and, you know, I never even asked him if this was just because we were on a short time frame, but he said, you need to go out and get endorsements from people. So the first thing I had to do was put all those tips together, which were in random order, because I thought each of them up each Monday, and they weren't in any kind of chronological or any other order, and I had to, number one, put them in some sort of categories, tips about creating and crafting and general tips, and then how to tell a story. And it's by no means a complete set of tips. They're just what I came up with within that two-year period. So number one, I had to put them in order, and number two, I had to go over them and change my writing a lot because I wrote stuff about Archie Bunker and All in the Family, and not everybody today knows who that is. But then I had to send out some pre-publication copies to a whole bunch of people, colleagues that I respected, that I felt were seasoned tellers and that I knew and hoped would like it. And I was, again, extremely, extremely fortunate to have many of those colleagues send back some glowing endorsements. Kim Whitecamp, Lynn Ford, Granny Sue, Susanna Holstein, and Antonio Sacra and Bobby Norfolk, just people that I admire. I was fortunate enough to have them write back some real glowing endorsements that I don't think I'd ever find that in any other industry. And so I thank them all for that. And I think, again, I'm a lucky guy.
And, Mark, just thinking a little bit about if it's not what you know but who you know, and certainly what you know is really important too, but one of the things you've also done on your website, as I recall, is you have all these little statements where you ask a question and then all kinds of different people have responded, and you have all that. You have like a video blog on there, don't you?
On my website, I have kind of a video blog. When I went into this and decided that day that I decided to quit my job, I really made a mindset to go full force in storytelling. And I also made a conscious decision to go out and meet people and listen to them. That's probably the number one, that's the first tip in my book and the number one thing that I tell all my students is, so here's the top of the five tips, is listening to other tellers. And the best way to learn, the first time I went to Jonesboro and I spent 3 days and listened to 30 different storytellers, and I learned so much about what stories people tell and how they tell them and how they craft them. And so, and I went out and met them when I went to conferences. And one of the things I did that Tom is talking about is I took my cell phone or a little iPod And I said, hey, would you be willing to do like a 60-second video and you tell other storytellers what's important to you? And so the first one was actually Michael D. McCarty and then Doug Lipman at the both at the Timpanogos conference. And I just held up my cell phone and said, I'm here with Michael D. McCarty. What do you want to say to the new storytellers or what's important? And, of course, Michael D. McCarty laughed so loud he almost blew out the But his advice was tell stories you love, and that's one of my other tips. But I just did about 45, 60 seconds with each person. Then I put them all on my website, and I've got about 35 people. So you could go to that section of the website, and it's called Experts, and you could spend about an hour listening to Doug Lipman, Kim Whitecamp, the great Sid Lieberman, bless his soul. I can't think of all the other people on there right now because Sid made me teary. with some great advice about storytelling and things that they have done or what's important to them. So my whole thing is to learn from as many other people as I can. So I'll take a breath there.
And while you're taking that breath, Mark, one of the things that I just noticed and part of why I asked that question was it's some of those same people that you sought out and then you posted the little video of them that you then went to when it was time to find endorsements for your book. And there was some rapport that you had with some of these people already. So in a way, you had set the groundwork even before you realized you were setting that groundwork. That was
You're absolutely right, Tom. And I never knew I was going to write a book, although Ted Parkhurst, like 4 years ago, said, I think you have a book in you, and I wasn't sure. But I think it was a little unconscious and a little conscious, too. I made a decision to get to know people, and not to try and worm my way in, but as best I could, just be genuine. And, you know, I met Sarah Armstrong about 2 years ago in Hawaii, Sarah? Or no, we met earlier, didn't we?
I'm not sure when, but yeah, it's been a few years.
I think it's been at least 3 years. But and then we've stayed in contact. I've met other people long before I met Karen Langford Chase, person to person at a conference. We exchanged Facebook messages back and forth and ideas and concepts, and I emailed people and said, I've written this book. Would you mind reading it? And then let me know what you think about it. And one of the folks was Jim May. And I didn't know Jim that well. I'd met him about twice. And I did have one conversation with him. He did a short 60-second video for the website. And I thought, well, I'll take a chance, and I have so much respect for these people, and especially Jim. And Jim actually called me, and he said, I will read your book, and I will send you my thoughts on it on one condition. And I said, well, I think I know what it is, but you tell me. He said, whatever I write back to you is what I'm going to tell you, and that's it. No ifs, ands, or buts. You know, I'm going to tell you the truth. And my immediate response was I wouldn't have it any other way. And Jim went ahead and read the book and then wrote this incredible line that said it's like getting advice from an older brother, which I just adored. And Ted and I decided to put that on the front of the book. And so I think you're right, Tom, but I believe that if Jim hadn't liked it, he would have written me back and said, yeah, I don't think it's going anywhere. mm-hmm. But it was knowing them and having a relationship gets a foot in the door in some ways. But there's still a lot of work to be done. And I think I'm going to – I try to be humble about the book, but on the other hand, I think the book has some good, solid information in it. And most of the people that have read it have come back to me and say they like it. And I think I have to be that way. If I didn't have faith in it, I wouldn't be able to sell it. Or I wouldn't have, I don't think I would have been able to sell it to Ted to publish. So it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
I think there's really good information there. But
Well, tell us a little bit more about some of your tips, Mark. And we have maybe 10 more minutes for our call here.
Oh, my God. Well, the first thing I mentioned this. I was going to say this before. When I think about what are the five top tips I like, that's one thing. But when I think what are the five most important tips, I'm not sure what they are for all of you people out there, because if you go into an organization or a business or even one person, if I go to one person and they come up to me and say, what's the most important tip you could give me? I always have to ask them, well, what do you need help with? Or what's going on? Because, some organizations might say, what are the three things we need to do to fix our business or to be better at what we do? I don't think I can answer that unless I ask more questions. And so that's some of the tips in the book are actually about asking more questions. And drilling down, one of the things I say is I think as a storyteller, you have to be curious, not only about your other people that you meet, but your own storytelling. So if you find a story out there that you like, a theme, whether it's a folktale or a fairy tale, I think you have to use your curiosity and drill down below just the basic plot line and wonder things about Jack and the Beanstalk, let's say. What kind of person is Jack and what kind of person is his mother? And use some what if questions. I usually say about the big bad wolf and the three little pigs. If we look at the wolf and we ask ourselves questions like, what if he wasn't just a big bad wolf? Maybe he just hadn't eaten in 10 days and he wasn't really mean or angry at the pigs. He just, just happened to, maybe he knocked down the pig's door to borrow a cup of sugar. And next thing you know, there's the pig. He's got dinner for the night. So just asking yourself questions and drilling down further and further, I think that's one of my big focuses in the book. And it's in a couple of the tips about going further, not just at the top level. Is there anybody out there that had a question or something that they were dealing with that they wanted to look at or wanted an answer to a question?
Sarah, I really want you to talk about your database.
Ah. Well, thank you, Sarah. Well, most of the stuff that I have either on my website or things that I do came from what I felt I needed for myself. And when I started telling stories, I told 2 to 3 times a week at open mics, at guild meetings, at gatherings, and it got so I needed a system to keep track of when and where I told a story. So if I went to another open mic the week after the first one, I had to remember write down somewhere what story I told and who, what kind of audience I had. So I was pretty handy with databases, so I developed a database where I could list the venue, who was there, when it was, how long the story was, what the story was, and how I told it if I did something different in a particular way. And so I started to use it myself, and I felt that it had some value, so I put it up on my website, and then I said, anybody who wants to use it can. It's free. Originally, I thought I could charge for it, but I don't think there's any sense in that. I'm not going to make a millionaire out of being a storytelling database. So it's really for anybody out there who wants to go in you can drill down deeper if you want and put more information, but the essence is if you want to say, well, here's an open mic I went to, and here's a story I told, here's a guild meeting that I went to, and I told this story. So you can go back in and look at, let's say there's an open mic that happens once a month. You can go back and look at every month at that open mic and see exactly what story you told. Or you can look at a particular story and see you told it at this venue or that venue or that venue. When I teach at the elementary school, I tell stories every time I go there. So that's how I keep track of the lesson plans and what I did there. It's pretty simple. It's called StorytellersDB, as in database, .com. And if you can't remember that, go to StorytellerMark.com and click on the resources, and you'll find a link to it there. I think the other thing that I try and do is get other people linked up. I have a lot of resources on the website for storytellers to find other information. I blog. I have articles there. I've featured other tellers like Sid Lieberman and Doug Lippman and Kim Whitecamp, and put them in my newsletter or in other places because I think we all deserve some recognition, and that's what I try and do both on the website and did some in the book also. Any questions? How are we doing on time, Tom?
We're good. I think we're going to be moving towards wrapping things up, but maybe you could share another story, Mark. I know you had said that you had two or three stories that you might have access.
I have another story, and I'd have to go switch screens to look up where I found this. Let me tell the story, and then if we have time, I can look up its origin, but here's a story that I love. I love to tell it. I seem to remember it comes from India, and I call it the magician's wand. And I think it also has some applications in businesses and organizations, certainly for managers. So it was in a very small East Indian village that the magician came into town, and he decided to attempt to have a performance. So he set up a small table and began to gather people in the town square in the center of town, and he began to apply his trade of magic there, and he gathered a group of people, and interestingly enough, there was a young boy, a small boy, who came from the back of the crowd and came and stood right in the front of the table, right next to the table where the magician was. And while this young man had some tattered rags on, and his face was dirty, and the magician looked down and kind of took pity on him, felt sorry for him. And so the first thing the magician did was he grabbed a bowl, and he put the bowl on the table and reached down into the street and grabbed some dirt, and he threw some dirt into the bowl, and then he covered the bowl with his cloth. And then he took out his magic wand. Oh, the thing was beautiful. And in the hand of the magician, it sparkled. And he waved that magic wand over the bowl and over the cloth. And then he pulled the cloth away from the bowl. And there in that bowl was a set of clothes that just fit that young man. And the magician lifted the clothes and pushed them forward and offered them to the young man, and the young man shook his head and pushed them back and said, "I don't want those." Well, the magician was a little confused, and so he took another bowl, and he reached down for some rocks, and he put some rocks in the bowl, and he put the cloth back on top and again waved that magic wand, and then when he took the cloth off, there was a bowl of food, of rice and nourishment for the young boy that he thought had not eaten in days, and he pushed the bowl of rice toward the young man, and the young man pushed it back and said, "I don't want that rice." And once again, the magician was confused, and he thought for a moment, and then he had an idea, and he reached down and grabbed another handful of dirt and put it on the table and put the cloth over the table. And once again, waved the magic wand over the cloth, and when he pulled the cloth away, there was a stack of gold, and he pushed the gold coins toward that young boy. Once again, the young boy looked at the magician and pushed the gold back, and he said, "I do not want the gold." And finally, the magician did not know what to do, and he looked at young boy and was confused and said, "What do you want?" And the young boy looked at the magician right in the eyes and said, "I want your magic wand." Take a moment for that to sit in. I've told that to both middle and upper level management managers before, and well, let me ask you, what do you think the theme of that, or what do you think people might get out of that story? Anyone want to unmute in there? And we still have people on the call?
Yes, there's plenty of people on the call. Probably people are just thinking, "Oh, I don't know what I should say."
Well, I think for me, there is this the essence that we all make assumptions all the time, especially in business on a management level. We think we understand or know what our employees or the people that we supervise, we think we know what they want. They want a higher salary, or they want a better position, or they want a title. And I, for me, this I've used this story with families a lot too, because a lot of adults or parents think they know what their kids want. And the essence of this story for me is that the young boy really wanted the power of that magic wand. He didn't want the specific things that the magician wanted to give him. He wanted the power to make his own choices and have his own magic wand so he could choose whatever it was he wanted in the moment. So for me, that's most of what the story is about. Anyone else?
Sarah, I think you're right. And, of course, he can get all that if he has the magic wand.
And then as a storyteller or a therapist, and I used to be a therapist, we start moving into the conversation beyond the specifics or the actual reality of a magic wand. But what is it that you need to have that wand or have that power, or how can I help you get some power? That's the next step. And as I said, we start drilling down with more questions and more questions. So, boy, that time has run fast, hasn't it, Tom?
Yes. And, Mark, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing a little bit of your story of how your tips that you put out weekly, you know, turned into your book, and how your various conversations and your interest in learning about other storytellers has helped you, and how your work is, you know, working with students and college students, as well as elementary students, working toward that next generation of storytellers. And I know your two little stories that you shared today are both powerful ones, and they'll continue to work on us.
Well, I hope so. Thanks so much, Tom.
Yeah, and thank you for putting out your website and offering your database to folks. And I know anybody who's interested in Mark, if you just look up his name, Mark Goldman, you'll Mark Goldman Storyteller, or Storyteller Mark, you'll find his information. And of course, those people who receive the SIO information, there's links right there to Mark's website and also for his book.
Yeah, and anybody who wants, if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to contact me by email or my phone. I think that's even on the website, but I'm certainly open to further discussions with anybody.
Great. Well, thank you, Mark, and thank you, everybody, for joining the call today. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, everybody.
And, yes.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. It was wonderful.
Thank you.
Yep.
Take care.
So long, everybody.
Bye-bye.
So long.
I'm still with Tom.
Great. Thanks, Mark.
Well, thank you so much. Any comments or feedback?
Just a second. I'm going to end our recording
okay.
now.